And then suddenly you have a plant somewhere in a meadow and you say, oops, how did it get there? I know it. Yes, of course, it grows in Heiligenblut down below. It grows at 1,300 meters. And suddenly it's standing next to us at almost 2,400 meters.
That's the voice of Conrad, one of 30 national park rangers in the Hohe Tauern National Park. And with that, welcome to the Glockner Gipfel, the podcast of the Großglockner Hochalpenstraßen AG. With an area of 1,856 square kilometers, the Hohe Tauern National Park is the largest national park in the entire Alpine region and one of the largest protected areas in Central Europe. My name is Max Kogel, and today Conrad will be giving me a short guided tour along the hiking trail from the Kaiser Franz Josefshöhe to the Wilhelm Swarovski viewing platform. We would like to thank the Hohe Tauern Kärnten National Park for their cooperation and support in creating this episode. I look forward to seeing what awaits me, and I hope you'll enjoy Austria's highest view.
Hi, Conrad. You're a national park ranger, is that fair to say? That means your main job is to show visitors here on the Großglockner the beauty of the national park and guide them a bit, right?
Yes, we offer a weekly program, and in the Hohe Tauern National Park, there are highlights such as the guided glacier hike every Thursday. Then there are geological highlights, botanical highlights such as herb hikes. And then there is also wildlife watching. Behind this is actually an organized, planned visitor guidance to sensitize our guests to the extent that they actually stay away from very sensitive areas out of their own personal interest in the beauty of nature.
So that they take something away with them, that they learn something. And now today you're going to show me around a bit or show me a few things?
Let's go on the circular hike, which takes place in cooperation with the Großglockner Hochalpenstraße. This means that all road visitors who drive through the toll road are entitled to take part in this short hike. It takes place daily at 10:30 and 4:30 and goes around this place where we are right now, around the Kaiser Franz Josefshöhe and a few meters up to the Wilhelm Swarovski Observatory. This is a special highlight, a special view, and suitable for everyone. I mean for everyone when I say ideal for families, for people who don't necessarily want to hike far, who have now driven up there by car, who enjoy the beauty of the road and then say at the top, a short hike with my equipment, with my shoes is perfectly possible. You'll find that with me too, that the equipment isn't necessarily that serious. It's not a problem in terms of weather protection, because we can return at any time. With a bit of luck, we'll see the ibex and the marmots anyway, and a better view of Austria's largest glacier, the Pasterz, as well as Austria's highest mountain, the Großglockner, which shines down beautifully. We can see both peaks at their best on the left, the Kleinglockner and the Großglockner on the right, and along these walls the once mighty glaciation, which, as we all know, has been in retreat since the year 1850 and is now only a shadow of its former self.
In the Hohe Tauern National Park, all important alpine ecosystems are preserved undisturbed over a large area. More than a third of all plant species recorded in Austria can be found in the national park. Around 50% of mammals, birds, reptiles, and amphibians are found here. The national park now also offers a secure habitat for animals that were extinct in almost all of Europe at the beginning of the 19th century. If you hike from the valleys to the highest peaks of the national park, you will cross all climatic zones from Central Europe to the Arctic.
We now go up a few steps through the parking garage and see an old photo on the right of the clearing activities in the early years of the Großglockner Hochalpenstraße. So after the years from the 90s to the 40s and from the 50s, the road was still cleared of snow by hand. This picture alone speaks for itself. That was a special challenge, unthinkable today. But the Grohack company naturally reacted accordingly and brought these rotary plows into being, which are still the best way to clear the road of its masses of snow. But there are peak values, of course, but we always speak in superlatives. The Pasterz is the largest glacier in Austria and, as already mentioned, the Großglockner is the highest mountain. So it was in the year 1975. The highest closed snow cover ever measured along the Großglockner Hochalpenstraße with no less than 21 meters. This is a residential building with 7 stories and it is quite a particular challenge, although of course it was not like this along the entire stretch of the road. But at individual points, for example, in the Hochtor-Mitterdörl area between Hochtor-Fuschedörl, where enormous amounts of snow accumulate due to wind drift, avalanches, and so on. So we come out into the open again and already have the enormous botanical diversity at our feet. If we start here on the left, the blue Tauerneisenhut, we locals have a little funny nickname for it.
Mother-in-law's wort. I'm not allowed to say that out loud because this flower is highly poisonous. The poison is aconitine, and it even goes so far that there is only one pollinator for this particular flower, namely the Gersteck bumblebee, which is actually resistant to this amount of poison.
The other insects know that. It's a different matter for us humans. We always think we have to take everything in our hands and taste it as much as possible. Insects, animals in general, have a better understanding. Look here. The big silver scratchy things that grow out of it. Right at the foot of the wall, the lady's mantle, don't forget. The sheep's gift, medicinal herbs and more. And the beautiful devil's claw grows there too. The heart leaf, the Umfersblatt, a beautiful mint, the Jacquin mint. There is an enormous variety of species in the national park along our route. This area alone is home to around 1,400 different flowering plants and just as many different species of butterflies that make this habitat their home.
At the time when we are recording the conversation today and doing the tour, it is now mid-July. That means that now everything, all the alpine pastures are full of flowers.
Now is the main vegetation season, although this can always change slightly. This year is quite interesting because there were so many flowering plants very early on, so many early bloomers. At a time when I don't normally have any, I already have this German Gentian, Gentiana, Germanica in some areas. This is a plant that should actually flower much later. It's one of the last to flower of the 13 Gentian species that can be found here. That's a bit strange again. Nature seems to be under a bit of stress. There was much less snow this year in any case. We can still see the effects of the last few years. We're currently carrying out maintenance work again, which is simply necessary to install retention systems that secure the snow a little. The damage is, of course, enormous when huge amounts of snow start to move.
And the gentian you just mentioned, is that the one Heino sang about?
No, Heino sang. That's how blue, blue, blue the gentian blooms. No. The German gentian is not deep blue. It's rather pale and tends to be slightly purple, brighter, even brighter in places. It is often a little different depending on the location, depending on the growth phase and flowering form. It can be a little lighter and a little darker. It is a really beautiful clump. Heino sang about the one bluebell gentian pictured on the bottle of schnapps. It's also known as a drink, as gentian schnapps.
Now we come to a beautiful rock. If you look at this rock, you can see the schistosity of the rock, a green slate. The special feature of this rock, it comes from the former seabed of the Benin Ocean. This is a so-called bassinet, which was lifted directly from the ocean floor basalt during the uplift of the mountains and put under pressure, which is why it came under heat and then developed from the basalt into what is known as bassinet. And opposite us, we have a wonderful view of the Großglockner. When we look at the mountains, it's the same rock. You climb the Großglockner from the bottom to the top on what was once the seabed. That's a geological peculiarity, because these eastern alpine blankets, which Africa pushed forward in the course of its movement northwards, are missing at this point. That means we are right in the middle of the so-called Tauern window. We are missing no less than 3,000 meters of rock that should actually be above us. But since we are in the area of the highest uplift, hence the High Tauern, named after this Taurist camp, a Celtic tribe that once settled in the Mulldal. And that is, of course, a special feature. It allows us to look back in time. We can look back up to 300 million years into the mountains, and we can do this not only purely theoretical, but we can also take it into our own hands. Along the Geo Trail, for example, we can trace the history stone by stone, layer by layer. Visually, also haptically, and thus immerse ourselves perfectly in the history of time, as already mentioned. You can also see that here in the stone. These are all individual layers. It looks a bit like puff pastry, and that's what makes it so special. In other words, this rock was originally seabed and has been more or less rolled over by these overlying layers of rock. When I make bread dough, I have a homogeneous mass, but often I want to bake something else. Apple strudel comes to mind, for example. Apple strudel early in the morning is always a good thing. And then I have to keep rolling out this dough layer by layer so that it becomes a puff pastry and nothing else has happened here.
The Tauern window is a geological sensation. The highest mountains in the Hohe Tauern are formed from layers of rock that otherwise form the lowest floors in the Alps. There are also four massive gneiss cores in the center of this geological window. Formed from liquid magma, they now form such famous peaks as the Grossvenediger or the Hohersonnblick. After the fire, ice became the shaping force in the Hohe Tauern. During the ice ages, the alpine glaciers were much more extensive than they are today. Where the glaciers have retreated, a rapidly changing landscape is emerging. At first, debris moraines piled up by the glacier ice dominate the landscape, but soon the pioneers of the plant world begin to recolonize this seemingly inhospitable habitat.
That has also changed. If we look up the slope a little, the type of vegetation changes. We can now see here on our hiking trail and on this slope that there is, of course, slope drainage. The rainwater flows along the turf, and in the root area, which is not too thick, there is a bare rock underneath, and the water then collects at the foot of this wall, and we have more lush vegetation there. That means I have more nutrients there, and that's why large-leaved, fleshy plants grow there. The world looks different a little further up, but from this perspective, this is actually alpine vegetation. It has always been the case that strong winds have carried seeds up here from the valleys, but it was too cold. The growing season at this altitude has always been too short, so these seeds could never really germinate. Today the world looks different. These seeds are now able to germinate. We have calculated that the vegetation period in Austria has been extended by between 12 and, depending on the region, up to 40 days. Conversely, however, this also means shorter closed snow cover in the same period. This makes it possible for plants that need a little more warmth to grow at this altitude. This predatory competition, we don't hear it. In the animal world, we would hear it. In the plant world, it's incredibly difficult. But it is a cutthroat competition. If we look at this edge, we can see fine cushions underneath. This pioneer vegetation, the stemless cinquefoil, for example, is now being replaced by taller grass species whose seeds have fallen on this cushion by lucky chance and are able to produce heat. And that, of course, is paradise for a seed. However, the grass seeds that germinate up there monitor the cushion and bring back this typical alpine pioneer vegetation completely. If I look to our left, we can see an edelweiss. Bring me an edelweiss, they used to say. Here it is. To experience life in a special way. That's always a word when we say learning, but it's also a learning process. And the Glockner Road in particular, if we look along the road, what has actually already happened there in recent decades, at stopping points in cooperation with the Hohe Tauern National Park, it is in fact an excursion paradise, an adventure road, exactly.
And if we now turn around and look down onto Austria's largest glacier, the Pass Terze, we can see up into the nursery area, in the middle, the extension of the glacier, up to the Johannisberg, to the right behind the High Riffel. These are the large glacier beds. This is the nourishing area of the glacier, where the snow should actually remain all year round. I say now, there are years when it simply can't do that anymore. Of course, if there is more precipitation in winter, then the snow lasts longer, but it is no longer enough for the glacier to grow. And when we look down, we can see the meltwater from these slope glaciers to the right and left. It flows over long stretches of bare rock, over rubble and scree, and it simply gets warm. Due to the intense sunlight, the surface of the rock becomes quite warm. The water also warms up and then hollows out the glacier from below. We also see wonderfully that these melting streams then all disappear at the foot of the wall and on the ice. It would be better if they flowed over the top if the water was still cold enough for the glacier, but these circular collapses, which are visually very interesting and where you naturally want to go, and you can do that too. That's what I was just about to say. We offer glacier trekking with the Heiligenblut Mountain Guide Association, and we offer a guided glacier hike every week in the national park. It lasts the whole day and takes place every Thursday. The meeting point is at 10 o'clock at the information point on the Kaiser Franz Josef Schuhe, and then we hike to the glacier and back again until around 16 o'clock. Then I can say, I've had the ice in my hand. After all, this is ice. I would say yesterday's snow, because the ice is about 500 years old. You can see quite clearly how sluggish such a system is until it grows. But at the same time, the melting process also lags behind, and that's what we often find a little difficult to understand when we say, well, we've been talking about climate change for 30 or 40 years now and the glacier is still there. Well, but we've already passed that point because we don't even live in these dimensions. We don't experience what's actually happening on a daily basis, even if we could theoretically manage to stop all emissions and pollutants that we put into the air from one day to the next. It wouldn't actually help the glacier. It melts back, and if we then look in at the very back, the glacier tongue to the rear, then this so-called horseshoe fracture opens up. On the left, we have broken off ice veins whose connection has already been cut. And up to the right, as seen from us, we still have an existing ice vein up into the nutrient zone. This is more or less the aorta of this glacier tongue. And when it breaks off in the next few years, and it will, it's hard to say. I was at the back recently and it's still quite mighty. But I assume that it will break in the next few years, as I said. And then the entire glacier tongue, which is around 4 kilometers long, is a huge block of dead ice.
But that means it will also have a long-term impact on vegetation and wildlife that the glacier is disappearing, which will also change things here.
In any case, look to the left. There's a cushion that's completely surrounded by higher growing plants. If I'm the first one in a scree field, in the glacier forefield, for example, we can see the beginning of this pioneer vegetation wonderfully. We're down there for an hour and a half, so we can see all the stages of vegetation perfectly. But I would have to say emergence and decay, because this cushion here is already dying. It's dying now because plants that grow higher, like there, look, that's bellflower, then there's marsh heartleaf and various types of grass. We've got clover there too. They're all much too high. They take all the nutrients out of the cushion, and at the same time, they also take away the vital light. That's this displacement. And if I come first, then I have to be a specialist, then I have to conquer my habitat. I have to adapt. And everyone who came first is all small. That's why stemless cinquefoil has no stem. It has countless purple flowers in the cushion. Every centimeter away from the ground means more cold, more wind, and therefore more movement, which is constantly buffeted back and forth by the wind and then breaks. The plants don't need that. Everything that produces over the summer, it processes back into its own compost pile in the pad in the fall and stores the energy, so to speak. But if I come later, like these grass species, in order to be able to assert myself, then I simply have to be bigger.
After the last ice age around 12,000 years ago, the Hohentauern presented itself as a barren desert of rock and scree. Animals and plants were slow to colonize this new habitat. Above all, species from the Central Asian cold steppes, from the Arctic region and the Siberian tundra. They first lived in the valleys and then, as temperatures rose again, followed the retreating glaciers up into the mountain region, where they now live in the core zone of the national park, where today they form admirable communities at the existential limit of all life. The forest returned to the valleys. This is how the vegetation stages so typical of the Alps slowly developed.
So now when we look up there on the left, there stands our Emperor Franz Josef. On the right, his memorial plaque commemorates his visit to the Glockner. Emperor Franz Josef on September 7th, 1856. That's when he was up there. The emperor always walked, was an enthusiastic mountain man and a nature lover. Sisi usually rode up to what is now the Glockner House and then had strong men carry her up to the glacier in a sedan chair. And all these points were later confirmed in a written request to the imperial court so that we could then use this imperial naming. Kaiser Franz Josef's Hohe, Kaiser Franz Josef's House, Erzherzog Johann Hütte, Elisabeth Felsen, Elisabeth Rast, and so on. So we come to the Wilhelm Swarovski Observatory. This was built here in cooperation with the Swarovski Company, hence the chosen shape of a crystal, a visitor magnet, and equipped with all kinds of information. At the same time, it is also equipped with the most modern optical devices provided by Swarovski. Every year we get the most modern telescopes and binoculars, and when I look up there with a good telescope in the direction of the Glockner Peak, and not only can I see someone walking or something moving, but I can also recognize the color of the cloak, then that is a very special optical system that is provided. Again, in cooperation with the Großglockner Hochalpenstrasse, we can staff this tower, let's call it. The guests receive the relevant information, and yet another highlight that makes this day trip, or perhaps it is more like a day trip, as there are also overnight accommodation options up here on the Kaiser Franz Josefshöhe to spend the night there, to experience a wonderful sunrise and sunset. And that's something special in the high mountains, enjoying the clear air, the cool air above all. That's really something special. And if I look down to the left now, you can see a rock wall down there, a small scree wall. And there's a bigger rock over to us. It has a point down to the right. And just below it, an ibex is walking. I can see him. A strong male animal. Of course, it's quite an experience to see him walking down there aesthetically in its territory, the king and his throne, we could say. This is an ancestral habitat, and that's where they can usually be seen. When it's really hot, they move further up. But as it is now, with a bit of weather yesterday and a bit of a thunderstorm and a bit of cooling, they are a bit below us. And for us, it's a great opportunity to offer guided wildlife watching for our guests every Friday. And then within a few steps or short hikes, again equipped with appropriate optical devices to observe the animals in their natural habitat.
Yes, and if the ibex is the king, who are his subjects? Or in other words, what other animals can be found up here?
Yes, we still have the king of the skies, the golden eagle. Of course, we have a few breeding pairs of golden eagles in the national park, but we also have bearded vultures here from time to time. We have summer guests here, for example, a bald vulture, rarely but occasionally the black vulture. And animals that live permanently, the biggest land predator up here would be the fox. But that's no problem for an ibex or a chamois, unless it's an injured animal, but otherwise no problem. Otherwise, of course, there are larger, smaller animals. I'm thinking of the snow vole. The snow mouse lives at an altitude of up to 4,700 meters. So it could theoretically live above the summit of the Großglockner. And that's where we find them.
What does the snow mouse eat in winter?
In winter, the snow vole is active under the snow and has nests. These are buds, the survival buds of our plants, and this is their food in winter.
But Conrad, tell me, haven't we forgot someone?
The marmots? Yes, of course, there it is already, a so-called monkey smoke. We Corinthians tend to trivialize it a bit. The females are cats, the males are bears, the cubs are monkeys, but we Corinthians like to call them efchen. And probably marmot guarantee, that's always a story. But yes, if you don't see one all day, it's almost incomprehensible and has never happened to me. The posing animals come out, of course, and observe their surroundings, and then I'll look down on the roads to see what's going on. The sun rays tickle their noses. So from that point of view, perfectly suited. These are this year's young. There's a bigger one outside on the left now.
Mm-hmm.
That's already an adult in this case. Interesting about these animals, of course, are their vital functions that reduce the animals before they go into hibernation around the end of October almost to zero. This means that their heart beats twice a minute during hibernation. They inhale every 5 minutes, body temperature around 5 degrees Celsius, and in this near-dead state, they then hibernate for 7 months without eating. They are correspondingly slimmer after this seven-month diet. Again, with April, at the end of April, they come out of their winter dens again and then enjoy the short but intense summer until the next hibernation. We have it a bit nicer then. We don't have to go without food for so long. We have perfect cuisine up there. There is, of course, a souvenir store up here and corresponding culinary delights where tired hikers can fortify themselves during their hike or on their own.
Yes.
And that's the nice thing, because these are simply regional products that SEP serves up here. I don't think you could have a better view. So if that's not a pleasure, then a good meal is too. yes, I don't know. I think that's all you can have. You can just go home happy and say, yes, Austria is not only a beautiful country, but Austria also has all sorts of things. That's how we do it. Now we're going for a Wiener Schnitzel because, yes, that was a bit exhausting. We got hungry.
Oh, yes, I'm hungry now, too. Thank you very much, Konrad, for the tour today.
You're welcome.
This was a new episode of Glockner Gipfel, the podcast of Großglockner Hochalpenstraßen AG. We would be delighted if you enjoyed it and would like to leave us a positive review on the podcast platforms or recommend the Glockner Gipfel to others and subscribe. For more information, please visit our website at grossglockner.at or send us an email to info@grossglockner.at. Thank you for listening and see you next time.
This podcast was recorded in German language and then transformed to English with the help of artificial intelligence.